Now we wait at Radio Rewind. Now we wait at Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.
You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. Today we're starting the review of a new book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. And let's look at what the cover jacket says about the book. The Biology of Belief is a groundbreaking work in the field of new biology. Author Bruce H. Lipton is a former medical school professor and research scientist. His experiments and those of other leading-edge scientists have examined in great detail the mechanisms by which cells receive and process information. The implications of this research radically change our understandings of life. It shows that genes and DNA do not control our biology, but instead DNA is controlled by signals from outside the cell, including the energetic messages emanating from our positive and negative thoughts. This profoundly hopeful synthesis of the latest and best research in cell biology and quantum physics is being hailed as a major breakthrough, showing that our bodies can be changed as we retrain our thinking. The Biology of Belief, Prologue. If you could be anybody, who would you be? I used to spend an inordinate amount of time pondering that question. I was obsessed with the fantasy of changing my identity because I wanted to be anybody but me. I had a good career as a cell biologist and as a medical school professor, but that didn't make up for the fact that my personal life was, at best, in shambles. The harder I tried to find happiness and satisfaction in my personal life, the more dissatisfied and unhappy I became. In my reflective moments, I resolved to surrender to my unhappy life. I decided that fate had dealt me a bad hand, and I should simply accept it. As the French say, que sera, sera. In the fall of 1985, my depressed, fatalistic attitude changed in one transformational moment. I had resigned my tenured position at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and was teaching at an offshore medical college in the Caribbean. Because the school was so far from the academic mainstream, I had the opportunity to think outside the rigid parameters of belief that prevail in conventional academia. I had the opportunity to that being far from the ivory towers, isolated on an emerald island in the deep azure Caribbean Sea, I experienced a scientific epiphany that shattered my beliefs about the nature of life. My life-changing moment occurred while I was reviewing my research on the mechanisms by which cells control their physiology and behavior. Suddenly, I realized that a cell's life is controlled by the physical and energetic environment and not by its genes. Genes are simply molecular blueprints used in the construction of cells, tissues, and organs. The environment serves as a contractor who reads and engages these genetic blueprints and is ultimately responsible for the character of a cell's life. It is a single cell's awareness of the environment, not its genes, that sets into motion the mechanisms of life. As a cell biologist, I knew that my insights had powerful ramifications for my life and the lives of all human beings. I was acutely aware that each of us is made up of approximately 50 trillion single cells. I had devoted my professional life to better understanding single cells because I knew then, and I know now, that the better we understand single cells, the better we can understand the community of cells that comprises each human body, and that if single cells are controlled by their awareness of the environment, so too are we trillion-celled human beings. Just like a single cell, the character of our lives is determined not by our genes, but our responses to the environmental signals that propel our lives. On the one hand, my new understanding of the nature of life was a jolt. For close to two decades, I had been programming biology's central dogma, the belief that life was completely controlled by genes. This was drilled into the minds of all medical students. On the other hand, my new understanding was not a complete surprise. I had always had niggling doubts about genetic determinism. Some of those doubts stemmed from my 18 years of government-funded research on cloning stem cells. Though it took a sojourn outside of traditional academia for me to fully realize it, my research offered incontrovertible proof that biology's most cherished tenets regarding genetic determinism are fundamentally flawed. My new understanding of the nature of life is not only collaborated my stem cell research, but also, I realized, contradicted another belief of mainstream science that I'd been propounding to my students, the belief that allopathic medicine is the only kind of medicine that merits consideration in medical school. By finally giving the energy-based environment its due, it provided for a grand convergence uniting the science and practice of allopathic medicine, complementary medicine, and the spiritual wisdom of ancient and modern faiths. On a personal level, I knew at the moment of insight that I had gotten myself stuck simply by believing that I was fated to have a spectacularly unsuccessful personal life. There is no doubt that human beings have a great capacity for sticking to false beliefs with great passion and tenacity, and hyper-rational scientists are not immune to this. Our well-developed nervous systems, headed by our big brain, is testament to our awareness, is far more complicated than that of a single cell. When our uniquely human minds get involved, we can choose to perceive the environment in different ways, unlike a single cell whose awareness is more reflective. I was exhilarated by the new realization that I could change the character of my life simply by changing my beliefs. I was instantly energized because I realized that there was a science-based path that would take me from my job as a perennial victim to my position as co-creator of my destiny. It has been more than 20 years since that magical night in the Caribbean. Throughout the intervening years, biological research has continued to collaborate the knowledge I gained on that early morning. Today, two newly evolved fields of science, representing the most important areas of biomedical research, substantiate the conclusions offered in my book, The Biology of Belief. First, the science of signal transduction focuses upon biochemical pathways by which cells respond to environmental cues. Environmental signals engage cytoplasmic processes that can alter gene expression and thereby control cell fate, influence cell movement, control cell survival, or even sentence a cell to death. Signal transduction science recognizes that the fate and behavior of an organism is directly linked to its perception of the environment. In simple terms, the character of our life is based upon how we perceive it. Second, the new science of epigenetics, which literally means control above the genes, has completely upended our conventional understanding of genetic control. Epigenetics is the science of how environmental signals select, modify, and regulate gene activity. This new awareness reveals our genes are constantly being remolded and remodeled in response to life experiences, which again emphasizes that our perceptions of life shape our biology. Months after this book was first published, an article in one of the most prestigious journals, Nature, revealed exciting new epigenetic insights in how the environment controls gene activity in stem cells, which coincidentally is the same subject and conclusion that I offer in further in this book. I must admit that I was amused by the fact that my chapter is entitled "It's the Environment, Stupid," while the more recent Nature article was titled "It's the Ecology, Stupid." 2005, Nature 435:268. Essentially, we are on the same page. Some scientists in reviewing this book asked, quote, "So what's new about this work?" unquote. Leading-edge scientists are familiar with the concepts proposed herein, and that's a good thing. The problem is related to the fact that over 99% of the rest of the population, the lay audience, is still operating from antiquated and disempowering beliefs about the victims of their genes. While research scientists might be familiar with this new and truly radical shift in awareness, these insights have yet to trickle down to the general public. The media worsens the situation by misleading the public with a never-ending onslaught of stories, presumably identifying a gene that controls this cancer or that malady. Consequently, the intention behind this book is to translate the significance of this leading-edge science so that it is accessible to the lay audience. It is my sincerest hope that you will recognize many of the beliefs propelling your life are false and self-limiting, and you can be inspired to change those beliefs. Understanding on a scientific level how cells respond to your thoughts and perceptions illuminates the path to personal empowerment. The insights we gain through this new biology unleash the power of consciousness, matter, and miracles. The Biology of Belief is not a self-help book. It is a self-empowerment book. The information offers knowledge of self, and from that knowledge comes the power to control your life. This information is powerful. I know it is. The life I have created using this awareness is so much richer and satisfying that I no longer ask myself, if I could be anybody, who would I be? For now, the answer is a no-brainer, a no-brainer. I want to be me.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are reviewing the book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. Introduction. The Magic of Cells. When I was 7 years old, I stepped into a small box in Mrs. Novak's second grade classroom, high enough to plop my eye right into the lens and eyepiece of a microscope. Alas, I was too close to see anything but a blob of light. I finally calmed down enough to listen to instructions and to back off from the eyepiece. And then it happened, an event so dramatic that it would set the course for the rest of my life. A paramecium swam into the field, and I was mesmerized. The raucous din of the other kids faded, as did the back-to-school smells of freshly sharpened pencils, new waxy crayons, and plastic Roy Rogers pencil cases. My whole being was transformed by the alien world of this cell that for me was more exciting than today's computer-animated special effect movies. In the innocence of my child mind, I saw this organism not as a cell, but as a microscopic person, a thinking, sentient being. Rather than aimlessly moving around, this microscopic single-celled organism appeared to me to be on a mission, though what kind of mission I didn't know. I quietly watched over the paramecium's shoulder as it busily comported itself in and out around the algal mat. While I was focusing on the paramecium, a large pseudopod of a gangly amoeba began to ooze into the field. Just then, my visit to this Lilliputian world ended abruptly when Glenn, the class bully, yanked me off the step and demanded his turn at the microscope. I tried to get Mrs. Novak's attention, hoping that Glenn's personal foul would get me another minute at the microscope free throw line. But it was just minutes before lunchtime, and the other kids in line were clamoring for their turn. Immediately after school, I ran home and excitedly relayed my microscopic adventure to my mother. Using my best second grade powers of persuasion, I asked, then begged, then cajoled my mother into getting me a microscope, where I could spend hours mesmerized by this alien world that I could access via the miracle of optics. Later, in graduate school, I advanced to an electron microscope. The advantage of an electron microscope over a conventional light microscope is that it is 1,000 times more powerful. The difference between the two microscopes is analogous to the difference between the 25-cent observational telescopes used by tourists to observe scenic vistas and the orbiting Hubble telescope that transmits images of deep space in striking clarity. Entering the electron microscopy suite of a laboratory is a rite of passage for all aspiring biologists. You enter through a black revolving door, similar to the one separating photographic dark rooms from illuminated work areas. I remember the first time I stepped into the revolving door and began to turn it. I was in darkness between two worlds, my life as a student and my future life as a research scientist. When the door completed its rotation, I was deposited into a dark, large chamber, dimly lit by several red photographic safe lights. As my eyes adapted to the available light, I gradually became awed by what stood before me. The red lights were reflecting eerily off the mirrored surface of a massive foot-thick chromium steel column of electromagnetic lenses that rose to the ceiling in the center of the room. Spreading out on either side at the base of the column was a large control console. The console resembled the instrument panels of a Boeing 747, filled with switches, illuminated gauges, and multicolored indicator lamps. Large, tentacle-like arrays of thick power cords, water hoses, and vacuum lines radiated from the base of the microscope like taproots at the base of an old oak tree. The sound of clanking vacuum pumps and the whir of refrigerated water recirculators filled the air. For all I knew, I just emerged on the command deck of the USS Enterprise. Apparently, though, it was Captain Kirk's day off, for sitting at the console was one of my professors who was engaged in the elaborate procedure of introducing a tissue specimen into a high vacuum chamber in the middle of the steel column. While the minutes passed, I experienced a feeling reminiscent of that day in second grade when I first saw a single-celled organism. Finally, a green fluorescent light image appeared on the phosphor screen. The presence of darkly stained cells could barely be discerned in the plastic sections, which were enlarged to about 30 times their original size. When the magnification was increased one step at a time, first 100 times, then 1,000 times, and then 10,000 times. When we finally hit warp drive, the cells were magnified to over 100,000 times their original size. It was indeed Star Trek. But rather than entering outer space, we're going deep into the inner space where, quote, no man had gone before, unquote. One moment I was observing a miniature cell, and seconds later I was deep into its molecular architecture. My awe at being at the edge of this scientific frontier was palpable. So was my excitement when I was made honorary co-pilot. I put my hands on the controls so that I could fly over this alien cellular landscape. My professor was my tour guide, pointing out notable landmarks. Here's the mitochondria. Here's the Golgi body. Over there is a nuclear pore. And this is a collagen molecule. And oh, yes, and there's a ribosome. Most of the rush I experienced came from my vision of myself as a pioneer traversing territory that had never been seen by human eyes. While the light microscope gave me an awareness of cells as sentient creatures, it was the electron microscope that brought me face to face with the molecules that were the very foundation of life itself. I knew that buried within the cytoarchitecture of the cell were clues that would provide insight into the mysteries of life. For a brief moment, the microscope's portholes became a crystal ball. In the eerie glow, green glow of the fluorescent screen, I saw my future. I knew I was going to be a cellular biologist whose research would focus on scrutinizing every nuance of the cell's ultrastructure to gain insights into the secrets of cellular life. As I learned early on in graduate school, the structure and function of biological organisms are intimately intertwined. By correlating the cell's microscopic anatomy with its behavior, I was sure to gain insight into the nature of nature. Throughout graduate school, postdoctoral research, and into my career as a medical school professor, my waking hours were consumed by explorations into the cell's molecular anatomy. For locked deep within the cell's structure were the secrets of its functions. My explorations into the secrets of life led me into a research career studying the character of cloned human cells grown in tissue cultures. 10 years after my first close encounter with an electron microscope, I was a tenured faculty member at the prestigious University of Wisconsin School of Medicine, internationally recognized for my research on cloned stem cells, and honored for my teaching skills. I had graduated to more powerful electron microscopes that allowed me to take three-dimensional CAT scan-like rides through organisms where I came face-to-face with the molecules that are the very foundations of life itself. Though my tools were more sophisticated, my approach hasn't changed. I never lost my 7-year-old conviction that the lives of the cells I studied, indeed, had purpose. So let me do a brief summary of the author. Bruce H. Lipton, PhD, is an internationally recognized authority in bridging science and spirit and a leading voice in new biology. A cell biologist by training, he taught cell biology at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine, and later performed pioneering studies at Stanford University School of Medicine. He has been a guest speaker on dozens of TV and radio shows, as well as a keynote presenter for national and international conferences. His website is brucelipton.com. So we're going to continue looking at this at future shows, so please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
Hello to you all and welcome to Viewpoints on today's show.